Okay, so we've got I think probably two more. We might finish this in one shear, but I think we'll probably do one class after this to finish the whole arc of David and Avshalom. Avshalom is no longer with us, and we're kind of moving into the post-mortem. And what we're going to see is how the follow-up to that, right? You can win the war, but then the next challenge is going to be to win the peace. And we're going to have the in Perek Chaf, the rebellion of Sheva ben Bechri, which we're going to see really is a counterpart to the rebellion of Avshalom, and is a great way the Navi has for taking a step back and appreciating the kingship of David in its totality, with all of its strengths and all of its weaknesses. So we're going to continue to explore the personality of David and really explore the personality of Yoav. You know, last week we showed the real basic philosophical difference between David and Yoav. Yoav's philosophy being that you're hating your friends and you're loving your enemies, and that is what David is trying to do. David tries to make peace, and Yoav says, be hyper loyal to the family of David and be hyper aggressive to anybody who opposes you. And if you think about it, what David did last week, right? David was exactly as Yoav said. Even after David wanted to save Avshalom's life, so what does he do? There are two generals in Perek Yutess, right? David fires Yoav, and he hires Amasa, who had betrayed him and had been the general for Absalom's army. Right? He just fired the general who won his war, and he hires the guy who tried to beat him and kill him. Then after that, we had the two members of the family of Shaul, Shimi ben Gera, who was David's enemy, and David forgives him. And there was Mephibosheth, the son of Yehonasan, who was David's ally, and David did not really do what he was supposed to do. Chazal were extremely critical on this front, and David split his estate instead of listening to him and giving it all back. So indeed, David follows the approach of exactly as Yoav had said, of loving his enemies and hating his friends, with some complex results, right? The Navi seemed pretty clearly to be opposed to his soft policy towards Avshalom. We said complicated his soft policy towards Amasa. That's going to come up this week. Pretty positive, actually, towards his forgiving attitude towards Shimi ben Gera. At the same time, David is complex. Like, he hates all his friends, Chas v'Shalom. David was very supportive to Barzillai at Giladi. He was very rewarding to that friend that he had. But you know, on the whole, the spotlight last week really was on the warts of David's more dovish policy. And what we're going to see in the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri, there are really two things we're going to focus on. From the perspective of Yoav, we're going to see the warts of Yoav's approach. You know, there's no panacea, there's no perfect approach that which is out there. Yoav, everything he was saying made a lot of sense when it came to Avshalom. Maybe made less sense when Avishai's brother had the same approach and wanted to kill Sheva ben Bichri, like Shimi ben Gera. And now we'll see what happens with this as the rebellion of Sheva comes into the forefront. So that's going to be one major issue. The second issue, as we said, is going to be to focus on what is the rebellion and what does it say about the Malchus. So now we'll sort up the screen share. All right. I think we had this map last time, but just to appreciate and to remember the political challenge that faces David as they come back from the rebellion of Absalom, where he's now won the battle, but how does he now reunite the kingship, right? There are the four groups that David has to unite. There's Yehuda in the south. There's Binyamin right in the north, the old family of Shaul. Then there are all the Shvatim in the north, and there are the Shvatim on the other side of the Jordan River. David has this side on his team in the battle of Avshalom. Now he's got to find ways to get everyone else on his side. So as we saw, the way to get Yehuda on his side is by bending over backwards to Yehuda and to Amasa, who is the general from Yehuda. He's David's own nephew. So be very forgiving to their leadership. So let's try to get them on board. Binyamin, that was the political message of Shimei ben Gera. Hey, I'm an important person. I'm not coming to David by myself. I'm coming at the head of 1,000 men from Shevet Binyamin. I'm a leader from the family of Shaul. If David forgives shimmy, that can be a way to get the rest of Shevet Binyamin on his side. Makes a lot of sense. You know, you think politically, Yoav is not a politician, he's a general. And sometimes making peace is the better way. But by doing this, by trying to show favoritism to some, and maybe this was an impossible challenge, David runs into trouble with others. So the Navi told us that David turned to Yehuda, and he said, Achayatem atzmi usariyatem, you're my flesh, you're my blood. David succeeds in winning Yehuda over to him. Vayat es levav kol ish Yehuda ki ish echad, by being nice to Yehuda, by being nice to Amasa, by referencing his family tied to them, David is able to get them to come back onto his side. The problem is that this immediately alienates the other Shvatim, right? That coalition we talked about that Avshalom was able to build, that very, very rickety coalition where Yehuda was jealous of the other Shvatim were jealous of Yehuda. What they all shared in common was that they were angry towards David. So Avshalom used that to get them on the same side. Well, now it falls apart. Push comes to shove. David shows some favoritism to Yehuda. And immediately, everyone else gets upset. What's going on that Yehuda gets to steal you? And they come to you. Yehuda resents that. Yehuda says, we've never gotten any benefits. That's why it annoyed us in the first place. Has the king ever showed any favoritism? Has he ever given us any food? Hasn't been the case. So the people are upset. Yehuda and Yisrael are having their falling out. This is a harbinger of what's going to happen, of course, with the split of the kingdom after the death of Shlomo HaMelech. Chazal, who said last week that the splitting of the kingdom is as a consequence for David splitting Mephibosheth's estate, we can see already that coming out of the Pshat and the Psukim, where 2 minutes after David is splitting the estate of Mephibosheth, the Navi is telling us, here's a preview of exactly what is going to happen. So now what happens in this very tense atmosphere? Once you have all the fuel in place, all you need is one man to light the spark. And that man is a man named Sheva ben Bichri. Barbanel is going to have a very, very important insight into him in a second. But it's very interesting. Note how the Navi describes him. Look how he's introduced. The Shem Nikra Ish Bliyah. Before we're even told who his name is, the Navi goes out of his way to make sure we know that this man is a disaster. He is a man, right, an Ish Bliyah. It happens to be in Sefer Shmuel. There is no worse description you can have for somebody than somebody who is an Ish Bliyah. Blial meaning bliol, right? He doesn't have a yoke, because this cuts to the absolute core message of Sefer Shmuel, that whoever the leader is going to be, at the end of the day, what matters is, do they accept the yoke of Ribono Shalom or not, right? That was the core debate going all the way back. We've talked about this before, between Chana and the Bnei Eli, between Shmuel and Shaul, between David and some of the other people who he comes across, right? Again and again and again, that core question. Do you accept the yoke of heaven, as basic, as simple, as elementary as it is, or not? This person comes on the wrong side before we even know his name. Now, who is he? Sheva ben Bichri, ish yimini. He is from Shevet Binyamin. He blows the shofar, and he says, "Ein lano chilek b'David, lo nach lano b'ben Yishai, ish la'olav Yisrael." Every man of Yisrael to his tent. So all of the northern Shvatim, and they all follow through. Now, this call of "we have no portion in David or Ben Yishai, each man to his tent," is exactly what is going to happen in Melech Malach, Parakeet Beis, when we have the rebellion of the 10 tribes against Rechavam ben Shlomo, right? Take a look. What do the people say? So we really have here a preview of what is going to happen when the kingdom splits for good. Right. So everything Chazal said last time about the consequence of splitting with Mephibosheth, we really are getting a foretaste of it. Instead, the Abarbanel has an absolutely essential comment. What was it that Sheva ben Bichri wanted? Right? It's the Abarbanel. Right? He doesn't set himself up as king. What did he say? He said, "Ish la'olav Yisrael, every man to his own tent." Writes the Abarbanel, "In anu tzrichin l'melech, let's end monarchy." Ki im liyos kol ish sarer beveso, every man is going to rule in his own house. Right? What is the, how is the Abarbanel positioning Sheva ben Bichri? He wants to return to the era of the Shoftim. We had David and Bathsheba and David and Uriah. We had all the politics, Amnon, Tamar, the princes, the kings, Avshalom, everything he did, all the death and destruction that came from Avshalom. Stands up Sheva ben Bichri and he says, Ribono Shel Olam, let's get rid of the whole thing. Let's go back to the good old simple days when each man was responsible for himself. We don't need a king. We don't need an Avshalom. We don't need a David. Let's all have Ish Sorer, Shorer Beveso. Ish Sorer Beveso, right? Ish La Love Yisrael. We can understand why, by this point in Sefer Shmuel Beis, after all the Prakim we've seen, why that can be such an appealing call. But as appealing as it may be, it is just as disastrous a call as Avshalom himself. Avshalom, who was so appealing to the people, the charisma, the youth, the energy, the empathy, right? Everything that he brought to the table after David, who's getting older and more distanced, and people feel resentment after a while. The old new fresh face comes up. But of course, Avshalom was just a mask for the tyranny that lay behind door number two of his rule. Well, behind the very smiley face of Ishalav Yisrael that Sheva is presenting to us, we know how the era of the Shoftim ended. When we do not have a ruler, it leads to anarchy. What was the disastrous end of Sefer Shoftim, which Chana and then Shmuel and then Shaul and then David had to spend really all of Shmuel Aleph digging out of, was the whole of the time of Pesel Micha, Pilegesh Begiva, as the Navi said again and again and again, Ba'imimahim, Ein Melech B'Yisrael, Ish Hayashar Ba'inav Yaseh. In theory, that sounds great, but we know that anarchy is the opposite of tyranny, but both of them lead to the same disaster, right? So the message is going to be, the way Abarbanel reads this over here, is that with all the warts and issues that come with what we've seen from David, at the end of the day, right, we appreciate the Kedusha, we appreciate everything that he brings to the table. And if you want to get rid of a system, you need to come up with a better alternative. And Avshalom and Sheva ben Bichri, right? It's so interesting. After the Navi zeroes in on a way that no one ever would dream of zeroing in on the faults and the mistakes of any king ever, right? The Navi puts a hyper magnifying glass, maybe even exaggerating the sin with Bathsheba and exaggerating the sin with Uriah. But then we take a step back and we say, well, let's look at the two alternatives. On the one hand, Avshalom. On the other hand, Sheva ben Bichri. Right? We held up the two sons of David. We saw Amnon, who was the paradigm of pleasures, the pleasure-seeking prince. And then Avshalom, who didn't really want pleasure, who was willing to wake up very early in the morning and work very hard, but he was obsessed with power. You know? Now we have Sheva ben Bichri, who presents the option of anarchy. Okay, so we'll skip a little bit. We'll skip Pasuk Gimel for now. Let's go to Pasuk Dalet because I want to focus really on what's going to happen here with the rebellion. So David goes to Amasa and he says, can you rally the men of Yehuda? That's why I hired you in the first place. Amasa was hired because of his Yehuda connections. He succeeded in getting them united behind David. So now, you know, it's go time. Put your money where your mouth is. Let's actually get the army together. We need them, right? And then it's very mysterious what happens exactly. He doesn't show up, right? He's late. So what are you gonna do? You know, time is of the essence. So David says to Avishai, who is Yoav's younger brother, you know, Yoav's been fired as the general. So David turns to Avishai, and David says, "Ata yiru lanu sheva ben Bichri min Avshalom. This can get even worse." Okay. Then he has a mysterious line. "Ata kach es avdei adonecha." Take the servants of your master. Now we know who these people are. These people are the professional standing army, the crazy, the placey, and the regular soldiers who do not need to be mobilized because they're on call 24/7. Right? So, question is though, whose servants are they? Right? Hach es avdei Adonecha. That's a bit of a weird way for David to refer to himself, no? So the Radak writes that this refers to Yoav. These are Yoav's men. So why is David telling Avishai to take Yoav's men? Because David fired Yoav. He fired Yoav because he was angry. The way Radak explains it is David was angry at Yoav for having killed Avshalom. Well, now he kind of needs Yoav. So, but he doesn't want to go to Yoav. So, okay, he goes to Yoav's younger brother and he says, you know, take your master's servants. Yoav is the one who's the master. Now, it's amazing if Radak is correct over here. Remember way back when we talked about Uriah. Uriah said to David, right, Adoni Yoav, right? My master Yoav is out in the tent, is out in the field. And that was like the shocking statement. No one ever talks to a king and calls someone else their master, right? So Uriah called Yoav my master. Now David is in a pinch and he turns to Avishai and he says, yeah, your master Yoav, let's get his men together, get on the attack. We're desperate. Now the Abarbanel doesn't want to read it this way. Abarbanel references this, and Abarbanel says, no, it means that David is referring to himself. But even if that may be the case, maybe David calls them his own men. The way Abarbanel reads it, they're Avdei David. At least that's what David tells himself. But next pasuk, Vayitzu Acharav Anshei Yoav. Who follows Avishai? Not David's men, Yoav's men. So the way Radak read it, David was aware of this and he's giving in. The way Barbanel is reading it, David is fighting this, but push comes to shove, these men are Anshei Yoav. This is Yoav's army. It's following Yoav's policies. And now as we leave, literally, as we leave David behind, because now we're going to go on the great chase of Sheva ben Bechri, so we can turn and put the focus on Yoav ben Tzruya. Right? So last parak, we saw all the flaws of David's nicer approach, and now let's look at what's going to happen with the harsher approach of Yoav. So they get to the Evan HaGdola Asher BeGibbon, the great stone in Gibbon. What's the great stone in Gibbon? The Dat Mikra argues that it is the Mizbeach. Remember at the time, the Mishkan is in Gibbon. Shaul destroyed the Mishkan at Nov, and then the Mishkan after Nov goes to the nearby town of Gibbon until Shlomo builds the Beis HaMikdash. So we're by the Mizbeach, and then what happens? Amasa ba lifnehem. All of a sudden, Amasa shows up in Gibbon. I'm going to go back to the map for a second to show why this is very surprising. Because, let's see for a second. What was Amasa's mission? Amasa's mission was to leave Yerushalayim, to go to the land of Yehuda, to mobilize the men of Yehuda to go to war against Sheva ben Bichri. So now, instead of finding Amasa, who's MIA, instead of finding him somewhere here in the land of Yehuda rallying troops, Avishai and Yoav, as we're going to see, find him to the north in the city of Gibbon, smack in the middle of the territory of Binyamin, who is the Shevet that Sheva ben Bichri, the rebel, is from. So why on earth is Amasa here when he is supposed to be here? This is a shocking discovery that Yoav and Avishai make. Now we need to appreciate that to understand what is going to happen next. There are two basic ways to see what's going on. I prefer the second. Amnon Bazak in his VBM series suggests that actually Amasa had betrayed David for the second time. You know why Amasa is in the land of Gibbon, in the land of Binyamin? Because he has turned against David once again, and instead of helping David by rallying the troops of Yehuda, he has turned on David, and he instead is in the land of Sheva ben Bichri, the enemy from Binyamin, helping them out. Okay, that's one approach. The other approach, I saw this is the Dat Mikra wrote this way, and I was happy to see that because I think it really does fit the something better, this is my humble opinion, is that Amasa is on a, he went rogue on a self-appointed peace mission, right? And it's a little bit ironic. David, the dove, as we saw last week, he tried to send Amasa down south to marshal the troops. Instead, Amasa decides to go north to try to negotiate a peace settlement. You know, 5 minutes ago, Amasa was the general of Avshalom. He had men from Yehuda in his army. He had men from Binyamin in his army. So it follows the reason he could think, I'm in a strong political position. I can negotiate. I can bring everyone together. And that is why they find him in Givon. He's gone rogue on a self-appointed peace mission. Now, that may be the case, but what does Yoav see over here? Yoav sees Amasa, and Yoav jumps to the conclusion that Amasa has betrayed David, right? Yoav's advice, Yoav's whole hashkafa, loyal to your friends, unforgiving to your enemies, Yoav looks at Amasa, he sees treason, he sees an enemy. And the way, I don't think that Mikra really unpacks this, but if we look at Amasa in this light, that Yoav is mistaking a peace mission for a war mission, then this is exactly the mistake that Yoav made in the very beginning of his career when Yoav assassinated Avner ben Ner. Avner ben Ner is trying to make peace with David HaMelech. Yoav is sure, or at least he convinces himself he's sure, that Avner is actually a double agent, and therefore Yoav assassinates him. And the same thing happens over here. And Yoav does the assassination in basically the exact same way. He walks up there wearing his army uniform. By the way, he wasn't invited to the party, right? David told Abishai to do it, but you know, you're not stopping Yoav and Tsruya from going to the battle with his own men if he wants to. Yoav basically, he doesn't even bother telling David, but Yoav tells himself about David, that's cute. You know, I'm still the general and I'm loyal to you, but I'm loyal to you on my terms, right? I am going to man this army to wipe out your enemies. So he's wearing his special army uniform. The Malbim actually thinks that Yoav is wearing his like general of the army uniform, right? Which is really great because the general of the army is supposed to be Amasa, because Yoav is essentially fired. So Yoav like marches up to him, still wearing his general's uniform. And he has a sword. Now remember, Yoav and Amasa are first cousins. You know, let's keep this to the beautiful, wonderful family situation over here. Both Yoav and Amasa are nephews of David. Each one's mother is a sister of David. So Yoav comes to Amasa's first cousin. Right, he says, "Hashalomah ta'achiv atochas yad yamin Yoav is kan Amasal ben Shoklo." He grabs with his right hand. He grabs Amasa's beard to kiss him, and then he bends over. His sword falls down on the floor. Yoav, who's extremely talented with the sword, quickly grabs it, picks it up with the left hand, disembowels Amasa, and he dies on the spot. It's very, very similar to Avner. It's also very similar to Avner in that Yoav has personal motivations underneath the political calculation he makes. And as you said, the political calculation seems like it was a mistaken assumption that someone was an enemy. And this is the danger of always saying, be there for your friends and be harsh against your enemy. Because sometimes the enemy isn't the enemy. And that's exactly what happens with Avner, that's exactly what happens with Amasa. Underneath that, what helps push Yoav in that direction, what helps him see an enemy, is the personal threat, not the political threat that they face, right? When it came to Avner, it was the fact that number one, Avner was also gunning for Yoav's job. And number two, the fact that Yoav hated Avner because he held him guilty for murdering his own brother. He considered himself the Goel Hadam. And here we have the same thing. Amasa is a threat to Yoav's job, but Yoav convinces himself that no, the real reason why I'm killing him, the real reason I'm getting him out of the way is because he is a traitor, he's a Morib Malchus, and he has to be destroyed, right? But that is the danger of the Yoav approach, is that we can be too eager to identify enemies when in fact they may be less than them. And that is going to continue as we go ahead into more of the parashah. So I'm just going to push ahead because I really would love to finish tonight. So we'll see if we can pull that off. So the after this happens, so I have to stop for a second because I forgot to let one pasuk. So after Amasa dies, we'll see how the Navi is clearly critical of Yoav here. So Yoav and Abishai, they keep going. They run after Sheva ben Bichri. Now, what the Navi is going to do in a second is it is going to contrast what happens here with the last time we saw Yoav kill someone. Last time we saw Yoav kill someone, he killed Avshalom, right? And if you remember what happened there was there was the anonymous guy who saw Avshalom. He tells Yoav, and Yoav says, you should have killed him. And then Yoav does. He kills him himself. And then when Yoav kills Avshalom, he is able to end the war, right? So the anonymous man was the problem. He was the one causing the war to continue. Yoav takes action. Yoav kills Avshalom. And then Yoav is able to blow the shofar and end the war. Well, here, the exact opposite happens. Yoav kills Amasa. Then he tries to go finish off Sheva ben Bichri. But the Navi says that this time it doesn't work. The people do not follow Yoav, right? And what's going to happen? An anonymous Ish is going to have to save the day. Ish amar alav min arei Yoav ayomer. Mi asher chafetz biyoav, mi asher ledaver acharei Yoav. Let's go. Let's follow Yoav. But the Navi, and it's clear how the Navi clearly is critical of what Yoav did. The Navi tells us graphically, Amasa is golel badam besocha mesila. Amasa is wallowing in his blood. He's been disemboweled by Yoav in the middle of the road, and nobody can continue. Everyone just stops. Everyone stands still. They're horrified. This anonymous Ish puts a cloak on top of Amasa. Then he takes him out of the road. And then finally, that allows the people to get over it and continue following Yoav on the chase after Sheva ben Bichri. So there's a total reverse dynamic. Yoav's approach here, not only is it ethically wrong, but here it's militarily wrong, right? He's just murdered the leader of Shevet Yehuda. These people liked Amasa. Some of them loved Amasa. They're ethically sensitive people. They're horrified by what Yoav has done. And Yoav, being so eager to wipe out his enemies, in this case, has completely undermined and completely hamstrung his own attempts to end the war, right? So it helped him, that approach helped him with Avshalom, but it is destroying him here with Amasa. So there's no one-size-fits-all approach, right? Before we saw the disadvantages of David, here we're seeing the disadvantages of Yoav, okay? Let's skip a little bit. Let's just get back to the continuation and the conclusion of the parak. So the Yoav is chasing Amasa, is chasing Sheva ben Bichri. Pasuk is a little bit unclear what exactly is happening. Whether by Yavor b'chol shivtei Yisrael, he traveled through all of the shvatim. So the Mefarshim disagree. Does this refer to Sheva because he's running all the way to the north to Avel Beis Macha? Or is it David? Or is it Yoav who's running up to Avel Beis Ma'acha? At least the end of the pasuk seems to be referring to Yoav because it says Ve'kalu Ve'yovo Ach Achra. A lot of people joined in with whoever's running, and it doesn't really sound like Sheva ben Bichri has such a large army. So it sounds like Yoav is really taking action here. We had the disaster with Amasa, but now thanks to the heroism of the anonymous man, it's all coming together. And now, once again, we have Yoav in total attack, enemy destruction mode. And just take a look, we'll read through the second one pasuk to get a sense of how the Navi gives us the dynamism and the activity and the aggression of Yoav on the attack, right? So assuming it's Yoav, Vayavor b'chol shevtei Yisrael, he crosses through all the shvatim. Vayakalu vayavo v'afachara, the army is coming towards him. Vayavo, the army came. Vayatsuru alav, they besieged him. They pour a ramp to the city. What's going on over there is the way you besiege somebody, and this is technologically very sophisticated. In the time of Yehoshua, the Jews do not have the ability to lay siege. But Yoav is a professional soldier. He's done this before. And you have a city where the, like Yerushalayim, right? Yerushalayim, the walls are on a hill. So that's great because you, people can't really bring up the axes or battering rams up the steep hill. They're going to get it wiped out. So what do? You build a whole ramp, right? Like the Havat Matzada, which allows you to come in a much better angle to be able to approach the wall. So Yoav is doing this. This takes a lot of time. It's a lot of engineering, but quick. They come, they besiege, they pour the ramp. Vatamod Abachel, they fill in the ditch that was before the wall. And now they're breaking the wall down. Quick. Attack. Destroy. And then what happens? Slam on the brakes. Because once again, the approach of the only thing to do for your enemy is to destroy them, there can be an alternative. Is shalom an option? What happens? And the irony, by the way, what's happened to Yoav over here is that Yoav has kind of turned into his nemesis. Yoav has turned into Avshalom. Remember, it was Avshalom who wanted to wipe out everyone who was opposed to him. It was Avshalom who loved the advice of Hushai, that if David holds himself up in a fortress, we'll take it down and destroy it brick by brick, right? Yoav was the one who followed the advice of Achitophel, but in the right direction. But no, don't attack everybody. You have one man as a problem, take out Avshalom, and then let everybody else go home. Here, Yoav is totally on the attack. What happens? Now to Yoav's infinite credit, the infinite credit of Yoav, he's going to be able to do the exact same thing, which is the hallmark strength of David HaMelech. Great leaders will make mistakes. Question is, can they correct the mistakes when they get called out? And almost every single time it happened to David, except from Mephibosheth, he turns things around. And here, Yoav does the same. Batikra isha chachama min ha'ir, shimu imruna el Yoav, keravnat hina vadabrana elach. Some old woman comes to the city, comes to the wall, and calls out for Yoav and says, I want to talk to you. Yoav stops the fighting, right? Through all the attack, the coming, the besieging, the pouring, the wall, blah, 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 blah. He stops. Yoav is able to tap on the brakes, and he comes to her. And look how, after everything was paced so quickly, the Navi slows it down. Yoav comes. Natomar Isha, Nahata Yoav. Are you Yoav? Yomar Ani? Yes, I am. Like, look at that. Look how we slowed it down, right? Like, you know, hi, Shalom Aleichem. How are you? What's your name? What's my name? That's not essential information. The Navi is trying to give us a sense that we're slowing things down. Batomer no, lo, Shema Divrei Masecha. Please listen to the words of your maidservant. Yomer, Shema Anochi. I'm going to listen. We spend two whole psukim before the Isha Chachama even says anything. Now, that alone is part of the wisdom, right? When someone is very angry and aggressive, you're not going to get them to just stop. You have to find space. You have to find time. You have to find ways to get everyone to take a breather. And then that is exactly what she does. Batomer Limor, and she said, say, right? She like gets ready to give a whole speech. She's slowing it down. Daber yedabru barishana limor sha'ol yishalu ba'avel v'chein hisam. And that's a vague phrase. How they translate over here? They shall surely ask counsel at Avel, and so they ended the matter. I don't know what that means, to be honest. I don't know if you do, but I don't know what Rashi means. Rashi says, I'll tell you what she's saying. Daber yedabu barishona limor. Haya l'chala daber l'shalom barishona. You should have spoken first. That's what it means. You should have negotiated. Limor sha'ol yishalu ba'evel. You should have asked to the city. You should have offered peace negotiations. V'chein heitamu. They would have been tamim. They would have made peace with you. Mi'anayu b'nei ha'ir mishalmim imachem, explains Rashi. Right? Anochi shilumi amnei Yisrael. I'm from the peaceful, loyal leaders of Yisrael. I am from the people, says Rashi, Shleimim v'ne'emanim li'Yisrael u'lamelech. There you can find people who are loyal to David. So the way Rashi reads the psukim here is, she is giving him Musar. She's telling him, Yoav, you assumed that just because Sheva ben Bichri was housed in this city, everyone in the city was an enemy of David. And that is not the case. there always is an alternative to fighting the enemy. Truth is, that's the halacha. Whenever we fight somebody, first you're supposed to offer peace terms. And so that's what the Isha Chachama is saying to Yoav. He's making the same mistake he made with Amasa. With Amasa, he identified somebody who now was a friend as an enemy. And now Yoav is coming to the city of Avel Beis Macha. He wants to destroy the whole thing. And she's saying, whoa, there are good people here. There are loyal people here. There are people you can work with. Not everyone is your enemy. Do not destroy everyone. And now to the infinite credit of Yoav, what does he say immediately? Vayan Yoav vayomar, chalila chalila li imavala imashchis, right? He's able to slam on his brakes. And he gets back into the same exact view he had with Avshalom, properly identifying the enemy and identifying the enemy now. Lo kehi davar ki ish mehar Ephraim. It's one man from Har Ephraim. He's not even from around here, right? You guys are Avel Beis Macha. It's all the way up in the extreme north in the land of Dun. I want some guy from Har Ephraim, not your neighborhood. He's an outsider. Sheva ben Bichri Shemo, right? He's a rebel. Give him to me, and I will leave the city. And that is exactly what happens. They cut off the head of Sheva ben Bichri. They throw it to Yoav. Yoav blows the shofar, and then everyone goes back. And the Navi does, I think, three or four really interesting things to end the rebellion over here. Number one, the Navi says, Vayeskabe shofar, right? Yoav blows the shofar. So look how this comes full circle. The rebellion began with Sheva ben Bichri blowing the shofar for rebellion. Now we have Yoav blowing the shofar to end the rebellion. Number two, this is the third time we see Yoav blowing a shofar to end a war in Shmuel Beis. Three times Chazal tell us is a chazak. We can now safely ascribe to this as Yoav's MO. Yoav is a general, he's a fighter, but primarily he is interested in ending wars. Yoav never fights for the sake of fighting, right? He fights for the sake of protecting David. Now he may take that too far, he may be too aggressive in his defense of David, but primarily he's a man of peace, primarily, fascinatingly. You know, Chazal say when Yoav is killed in Sefer Malachim, he's buried in his home in the desert. And Chazal explained, what do you mean in the desert? So Chazal explained, he made his house like a desert. He made his house open to anybody who needed it. Yoav really is a man of chesed. He's a man of peace, right? That's what he would like to be. He wants to be the person to end wars. Just when he thinks there's a war you have to fight, right? He's all in on war when you have to fight it, all out on war when he doesn't have to fight it. He thinks you have to fight war too often. But he's the one who ends wars. This is the third time, right? And then two more pieces. Vayafutsa me'al ha'ir ishla alav. Every man goes back to his tent. You see what's so interesting is that this is exactly the clarion call that Sheva ben Bichri, I keep on confusing them, that Sheva ben Bichri had issued. Sheva said, let's rebel against David so each man can go to his tent. Well, no. The actual way to have peace, the actual way to have stability is to have a king, but then everybody can go back to their tent. You know, the fact that you have David Melech in charge does not prevent the vision of every man going back to his tent. And then the fact that the story concludes with the Yoav Shav Yerushalayim El HaMelech. Yoav specifically goes back to the king. Remember that Abarbanel argued that what's happening here with the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri is an attempt to return to the era of the Shoftim. Well, if we look at the description of the war of Pilagash Megiva, well, there's more to say, but there's one point for now. It really, did I put this here? Yeah, it ends on a strikingly similar note with a huge, huge difference. How does the whole story end? This is very nice for Shoftim, right? After they fight the war, and that time, by the way, it wasn't a war against just one person from Binyamin. It wasn't just the war against the few people who actually raped the Pilegesh Begiva. B'nai Yisrael wipe out the whole entire Shevet, exactly what Yoav does not do over here. But it's very similar. Every man goes back. The Navi ends the war over there. Every man goes back to his estate. But what's the huge difference? After the Navi in Shoftim says, every man goes back to his estate, The Navi says, so, you know, you have, it's like, I wish you got like a visual of this, right? It's supposed to be a line of peace. Everyone goes back to his estate. But, you know, with the smoking wreckage in the background there of the tens and tens of thousands of Jews who've just been killed in a three battle long civil war, one Shevet has been almost wiped out, right? That is the image of peace of the time of the Shoftim. That is the anarchy, right, that you have, that Shimi wants to get back to. And the real just beautiful response to that is what's happening here, the last pasuk of the rebellion. Only Sheva ben Bechri is killed. There's no massacre of the city. There's no massacre of Shevet ben Yamin. It's one man. Everyone goes home. The Yoav Shav Yerushalayim El Hamelach. Right? So by ending there with Yoav goes back to the king, in contrast with Beimim Ein Melach Yisrael Yisheshar Beinav Yaseh, I think that's just a beautiful way of the Navi of telling us, look, we have David, we have Yoav, right? The two great royal and military leaders we've had. We took a careful look at the problems with Yoav's approach. We took a careful look at the problems with David's approach. But the response to that is not chas v'shalom to throw them out, right? Rather, it is to appreciate the mistakes they made. But number one, to appreciate how there is the tshuva from them. Number two, understand how much better that is than the alternatives. And we'll just conclude with this. And with this, we'll really wrap up the other class, Baruch Hashem. The last few psukim describe the David's cabinet. So Yoav is back in charge of the army, and Benayah ben Yoyad on the crazy place, and a few other people. And we can talk about the specific cases here, but just one very nice comment that the Radak makes. I think I have it over here. The Radak asks, why are we repeating the list? This list appeared back in Shmuel Beis Perek Ches. So we know who the people are for the most part. So the Radak says, well, whenever the Navi finishes David's wars, it tells us that his government. Earlier we had, after Hashem gave David respite from all the wars against foreign powers, so said, okay, now we have peace, and here's who's running the country in peacetime. And says the Radak, now that Avshalom and Sheva ben Bichri have been killed, we can look once again at the peacetime government. Right? So we have a government, we have stability, we have a general, we have people on the income tax, we have the scribes, we have the Kohanim, we have the advisors. It's not anarchy, it's not tyranny, it's a peaceful, stable government under the rule of David HaMelech. And I think that's the bottom line. You know, we look at David, there's so much to be inspired by, both in terms of the emunah that he has, in terms of the ability to turn around and learn lessons and change that he has, in terms of the people that he has around him. And I think also to be inspired by how the Navi is not afraid to take a really frank and honest look at the mistakes, at the problems, while balancing that with, number one, seeing all the positive, number two, seeing that the grass is not always greener on the other side. So I think we'll stop there. And yashar kach, everybody. I think this is, I really enjoyed this limud, and I hope you all did too.
You definitely did.